All right, I think we're very close to 5:30. Good evening, everybody, and welcome, and thank you for being here again. For those of you who haven't seen me before, my name is Emma Arubindade. I forgot to reintroduce myself last night. I'm going to start a little bit differently tonight than the way that I did yesterday, which is by introducing our speaker first, and then saying a couple of things. And I said to him I'd be 5 minutes, but I may just go a little bit longer because I'm a bit passionate about tonight's subject, and I hope I don't take away Buchler's thunder. So I have the great honor and privilege of introducing to you this evening Dr. Buchler Zuma, who is a lecturer in the psychology department at the University of Cape Town. He has his PhD in social psychology from this university, and he is a Mandela Rhodes Scholar and has received numerous awards, including a couple of Mellon scholarships and various other things across the course of his academic career, and also has the illustrious, I don't quite know what to call it, he has been named one of the top 200 South Africans to watch in the 2011 Mail and Guardian Young South Africans, so I really do believe that that's a very accurate award in some ways. He is also currently working with another one of my very favorite thinkers, Professor Anthony Bogues of Brown in the USA. And I think that this is some of the work, and I'm assuming this is some of the work that's informing his conversation with you this evening, where they're working towards a new philosophical anthropology of the human. So you can tell he thinks about things fairly deeply. And you can find him talking online at a couple of TEDx events as well. So if you didn't get enough of him this evening, you can carry on watching him online. He's speaking tonight, he's given a fairly provocative title, Racial Bondage and What Does It Mean to Be Human? Now, we've had somebody raise the question, I think in the last couple of nights, why are we still talking about race? And I think in some ways it might be a very easy question to ask and an easy question to answer, but sometimes it isn't. So I wanted to raise a couple of things. Why does talking about race in South Africa still matter? When research shows us, and very recent research shows us, that most of us are quite tired of having that conversation. And it matters because, I don't know how many of you caught the news last night, the University of the Free State has just, Jonathan Johnson has just reported a couple of the, it's terrible. Can I take it away and speak louder? Is that better?
Yeah.
So at the University of the Free State last night, or last night on the news, they were talking about the off-campus accommodation. And they had on the news a black woman phone a landlady and ask for a room. And her response was, and very clearly identifying herself both by her accent, which is one of the ways that we typify people, right? So if we don't see them, we still have that thing that we do. And said, I'm from the location. So very clearly indicating to her with all of these unsaid things what her race would be in a way that we as South Africans are very trained to pick up on. And her response was, no, 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 I've got a waiting list of about 13 people. That she put on the phone, a white girl picked up the phone and called her, and her response was, yes, I still have a few rooms available. And the white girl spoke to her in Afrikaans, gave all of the indication that she was somebody who was white, right? All of the things that you pick up that you don't necessarily talk about. So that's one of the reasons why we still talk about race. We still talk about race because our current employment statistics show that there are 4 times as many unemployed black people as white people. And that's not an accident. Some of the really big social theorists that us sociologists like to refer to talk about the way in which both privilege in terms of your class and your status, as well as oppression, are inherited. They get carried from generation to generation. And we live in a society that is only one generation away from a system that was 300 plus years in the making, where race and class were designed to be the same thing. I can't hear a word for that. I'm very sorry for that. I do apologize.
No, I said inherited was the wrong word.
Inherited
is the wrong word.
I don't think inherited is, it passes from generation to generation. So we are not starting from a level playing field, despite the fact that when we talk about these things, we like to assume that we are, but we are not starting from a level playing field. And that's one of the reasons why it's important to answer Dr. Lele's call for Monday, which is the way that I heard it, and I know we're doing things differently, but to lean into the conversations that are uncomfortable. Right? Otherwise, what we have is a system in which people can use race to obscure things. Another prime example that I saw after our matric pass rates were released, and Helen Ziller rightly criticized those pass rates and what we're doing with the education system, and Zuma said at a political rally, all I saw was a white person saying that black people are stupid. So we live in a society where, because we are not willing to lean into that conversation, people get to use that as a way of obscuring and shutting down conversations that need to happen. So these are, for me, on a very personal level, some of the reasons why we need to still carry on having these conversations, and why it does thread through a lot of the other things that we've been speaking about this week. So last night, Bradley gave you a very spatial way of looking at an issue of queerness, and invited you to queer-read things and look at them in new and unusual ways. And I hope tonight you take the opportunity to do that with Bouclet. And at that note, I'm going to hand over to you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, well, good evening. See, the problem with starting off with remarks that Emma did here, telling people he's done this, done that, is a problem that it sets you up. It sets up performance anxiety, goes up the roof, because now people are expecting you to perform in accordance to these wonderful things that have been said. So I would like to invite you to forget what Emma has said and pretend that we will start on a fresh slate. All right, so let me start by telling you that I somewhat feel a bit ill-prepared, let me put this here instead, for this talk. And the reason for that is because I've changed it so many times. And the last time I changed is when I was sitting right here, 10 minutes ago. So in a sense, I apologize if some of the things that I say do not come out as well-articulated. But that's also partly because maybe I struggle to articulate myself that well. So what I've decided really to do, and what I would like for us to do, just so you know from the start, is I'd like for us to have a conversation. So I'm going to try and cast things out in a broad canvas, and then for us to have a conversation. I don't want to stand here and teach to you. I want you to get the most kick for your cash, as it were. So I would like for us to get into a bit of a conversation. So what I've decided to do is, instead of speaking on, let's say, the actual topic, what I'd originally prepared around racial bondage and what does it mean to be human, I've decided to play with that title against, or with, if you like, the title of this series of lectures, which is Who Are We? Shifting Identities in Post-Apartheid South Africa. So I would like for us our conversation to revolve around these very two titles, and to, in a sense, explore and question, well, what do these things mean? What do these titles themselves mean? What do they imply? So that we don't rush into them, as it were. So it's to explore these things first. Now, those of you who were here on Monday when Prof. Ndebele spoke, Emma started off with a quote on the board, which unfortunately I wrote down, but I don't have with me, about what identity is and all of that, and who we are, in a sense.
I can recite them for you.
Oh, my head. Well, she's offered him to recite what she had on the board. In any event, let's not go there, Emma, in any event. I just want people, well, hoping people kind of took note of that. But what I want to emphasize is that the first thing that I would like for us to talk about is this very idea of shifting identities, right? Shifting identities. So what does it mean, shifting identities? What does it mean to shift identities? Through what processes do identities shift, all right? So that's the first thing. Now, the other question, of course, that question begs, or that very phrase, shifting identities, begs is, what are identities? Right, and that's the quotes, the two quotes that I was referring to there. And I think that what they partly entail, this idea of identities, is a sense of belonging, okay? Which also means that it's about space and time. So where do you belong? With whom do you belong there with? It's also about placing yourself as well within a historical moment. We are right now within a historical moment. So identity involves those things. But it also involves things which we did not choose, all right? Things which were accidents of birth, if you want to put it that way, all right? Things that we are born into, structures that we are born into. This university is an example of an old structure, all right? And there are many others. Whether this relates to our identities around gender, our sexuality, and so on and so forth. But where our creativity comes in is in how we use these things which are given to us. We did not create them for the most part, but how do we creatively work with them to fashion out what our identities are within a particular moment in history. All right? So that's what identities are. And yet, what the shifting suggests is that there's a large sense of fluidity in that. It shifts in one way or the other. But I also want to suggest to you that there's a lot of structure within them too. Okay? So how many of you had to stop at the traffic lights when you drove here? Right? I suppose many of you. So there is a sense of structure, and structure is helpful in our lives. Alright? If it was not for structure, many of us would be hopeless. Some of like myself, if anything like me, even with some sense of structure, I'm still hopeless. I forget things quite a lot. So that's the idea of shifting identities. Now I want to take slavery as an example of shifting identities, okay? Use that as an example, and then we'll move on to look at apartheid as an example of shifting identities. I'm going to just draw very broad strokes here. And remember that we're doing all of this to set up the stage for us to have a conversation. So hold a lot of these things in mind and make notes where you think you need to make notes. All right, so in a sense, slavery is really about, in one sense, the trading and trafficking and commodification, if you like, the thingification of human beings. That's what it was. Now, in our most recent history, we often think of the trade of human bodies or people within the African context. All right, but it's something that has happened the world over. All right. So, for example, in England, who was the which was the first nation that England colonized, as it were? It was Ireland, right? It was Ireland. Before they moved down to Africa and Australia and so on and so forth, it was Ireland. So that's where, if you like, the whole thing begins, really. And that kind of history, if you like, goes on to today. That kind of division and friction between England and Ireland. So then the English moved on down to Africa, Australia, India, the Americas, and so on and so forth. But slavery also existed, of course, in ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, ancient Rome, and of course in Senegal, Ghana, Nigeria, Angola, and so on and so forth. There was some form of slavery going on there. All right. So what was happening there is, as I suggest, it is the movement and trading and enslavement and dehumanization of people. So identities are being shifted there. All right. Were being shifted there at that time. Now, what we often, let me not assume that we often do not know this, but I was surprised when I first came across this, that even in the 1700s, during the Islamic expansion, Arabs had in fact enslaved Europeans and brought them to Africa. So slavery is not
a one-way thing where white folk have enslaved black folk. If you like, it is a human story. Alright?
And within that whole period, that is about shifting of identities, people being thrown around, being moved around, and so on and so forth. And what I'm trying to highlight here really is that what processes lie behind the shifting of identities. Right? And I'm using this idea of slavery to begin to suggest things to you or ways in which the shifting of identities happens. Our well-known example here is apartheid, of course, in our most recent past. Now, apartheid involved a whole lot of things, one of them which we know very well, forced removals, all right? Forced removals where people are moved from one place forcibly to another.
Now, I always like to, again, this was fascinating when I discovered this, the relationship between Newlands and Kaidich. Does anyone know the relationship between the two? Does anyone know the story? I'm sure somebody here knows.
Some of the furniture from Newlands is in Kaidicha.
Right. Right. Some of the furniture in Newlands is in Kaidicha. But how do you come to new land? Is the point I'm getting to. Right. You get the trip.
Right. So is Kaidicha. It's a new home.
It's a new home. There you have it. So Newlands, people who stay in Kaidicha or thereabout, stayed in what is now called new lands or new land. And they had to extract it from there forcibly to a new home, Kaelicha, to make new land for other people.
So, and that is the shifting of identities.
And the same thing happened in various parts of this country, including,
what's this place down the coast here? Simonstown, right. So it's I've been in Texas where a woman was telling a story of how she grew up as a child, in Newlands, and then were forced to be removed to Kaidicha, but they still have to travel every day to still come work in Newlands today. So there's a whole spatial, if you like, or geography or space, political, labor, leisure, segregation. That is shifting of identities. That's part of our history. All of that involves shifting people's identities. The Population Registration Act,
which ended in 1991, or was stripped off in 1991. That is one significant way in which you shift people's identities. The pencil test, all of those things were part of shifting people's identities. Right? Now what we need to ask ourselves then
is where I'm going with this, is that if in post-apartheid 1994, if this is the history we have around shifting identities,
what do we mean by shifting identities in post-apartheid? What does it mean to shift identities in this historical moment?
Well, what would it mean? All right? Because I want to put to you and suggest to you that part of the whole slavery and apartheid legacies that we have involve the whole machinery of violence, okay? Thuggery, thievery, a creation and institutionalization of privilege and poverty, all right? This is all that. This shifting of identities, it involves all these processes, all these things. So what would it take today if we were to say we are committed to shift identities? What would it take if that's what it took then? All right. So let's hold that conversation right there by remembering, as I was saying, that part of, well, let me end off on this note, but part of all of the shifting of identities, and what is very important for us to realize is that, as I've said before, it involves the dehumanization, commodification, and thingification, particularly of black folk. By black folk, I mean anyone who was considered non-white. That's right. So that is what was at stake for the most part. So that's the one conversation. So that's the one register we need to be grappling with, is a shifting of identities. Let's move on now to something slightly different, but related closely to this, and this is the issue of who are we? Right? Who are we?
Which I want to put together with the question, what are we? Right? I think these are closely related questions, but
to me at least they mean two things. But again, two related things. And the first thing is, who are we is a question of identity, or if you like, a question of identity politics. It's all that playing around, if you like, within this broad history that we've mapped out of fashioning who you are, or in that sense, or who you want to become, because we're always in the process of becoming. We never one thing. So you may think of it as a question of form, the form that you take. But what we are, as I think, a more humanistic project. It's about substance or essence. We are humans. That's what we are. Then we can talk about who we are then, and who we fashion ourselves to be as human beings. You get the difference? Okay. At least that's a difference I'm suggesting. So the question of what we are and who we are. I want us to look at a little bit then at this question of what we are, because I think that's more or pertinent, at least, given the histories that we've mapped out very briefly. And I want to look at this. I hope that some of you, most of you, in fact, would have come across the work of Frantz Fanon. The work of Frantz Fanon? Fanon. All right, let me... F-A-N-O-O.
All right, the work of... Check him out, he was a very cool dude.
A lot of very interesting things. Check that dude out. One of his most famous books is called Black Skin, White Masks. It's a bit, it takes a bit used to getting to reading his style of writing, but it's a very nice text that you read. Now, Fanon also poses this question of what we are, okay? And for him, as I say, it's a question of being human. It's a humanist question, okay? And he wants to put to us, or rather what he calls radical or critical humanism, okay? So he wants to argue that we cannot indulge in the luxury of asking the question who we are before we have addressed the issue of what we are. And for him, the issue of what we are, it really comes down to the ethics of being human. Right? It comes down to the ethics of being human, what we are. So how then am I to be with you if we agree that we are humans? Right? What kind of ethics need to operate? What kind of politics need to be in place for us to engage as humans? Okay? So it's the ethics of what it means to be human. Now, as I've suggested a few minutes ago, that the histories of shifting identities have, again, I'll use Franz Fanon's phrase here, relegated a whole population of people, rather humans, into the zone of non-being. Alright? Into the zone of being non-human. Alright? So black folk have been, for over centuries, have been put in the camp of being non-human, put in the zone of non-being. So then the relationship between the non-beings and the humans becomes a very interesting one. Right? Because once you've relegated folk into the zone of non-being, then it's easy to begin to do things that are non-human to non-humans, as it were. And that's where the question of race comes in as well, because then it becomes interesting. Who? Now, not what, but who in racial terms is human and who isn't? And that's why, again, it's still important to talk about race. All right? So even if we were addressing the big issues of shifting identities and who and what we are in this country, race comes in and shoots itself back in there. And racism. And that's why I speak of racial bondage. Okay? Because we can't seem to get away from this race issue, no matter how we try to wiggle out of it, because it's shot through a whole lot of our history in any event. All right, so at this juncture then, and I want to wrap up right now and then hand back to you really for us to have a conversation, I'm going to say a few more things. Is that I think in post-apartheid South Africa, and unfortunately this is where my thinking ended before I could finish it, but it's great because you're here, you can help me finish it, and it will be a collaborative project. Is that part of answering the question what we are and these shifting identities in post-apartheid South Africa, what is critical here is that we have to grapple, particularly here as black folk, we have to grapple with this issue of how the hell do we get out of the zone of non-being? How do you get out of this zone of non-being? Now, some people may suggest a few strategies. Here, I'm not rely on Fanon again. Okay. Now, Fanon says very straightforwardly, says, look, for black folk, it's you cannot try to get out of the zone of non-being by trying to prove that, you know, we too as black folk, we too are human, like white folk. He says this is not a good strategy. Why? This is not a good strategy because what it inadvertently does is it puts white folk as the standard of humanity. So you're in a problem now. And besides, now, this is where he talks about the dialectic of recognition. So who's going to recognize you as human? Can you depend, and I use here collectively, and I'm not pinpointing anyone sitting here, collectively as a people, or are you going to rely on the folks who put you in the zone of non-being to recognize you as a human being? So what kind of relationship develops there then? Are we not back then to the whole problem of master and slave kind of dialectic, broadly speaking? So we have a problem. How do we get out of the zone of non-being? I don't have an answer. But again, I'll go to Fanon. You can see that I like Fanon. So Fanon would suggest that in any event, even he too doesn't give an answer, by the way. He wants to suggest that the question of black humanity, what it means to be black in the world and human in post-apartheid South Africa in this context, requires a lot of meditation about what it means to be human, broadly speaking. All right? So it needs a lot of pondering about what it means to be human, broadly speaking. If you want to understand how we're going to get out of the zone of the non-being, we need to think about what it means to be human. So if you're going to think about the so-called, as if I'm not suggesting to say there's white humanity and black humanity, but to use the terms conceptually, we need to think about that, what it means. And of course, he wants to suggest that the issue then at there we have is the issue of liberty on the one hand and freedom. Okay? Now, liberty is when you're free of constraint. Right? But liberty is something that is given to you. Sailors get liberty to leave the ship when it docks in Sea Point, wherever it docks, wherever ships leave themselves. They get liberty from the captain to leave the ship, but they're not free. Alright? Freedom is a totally different thing. It has to do with the issues of responsibility and maturation. Now, the question I have for black folk, including myself, are we free? And the question I have for all of us sitting here, are we free? Are we free to truly engage in this question of what it would take for us? No, Chief, I'm going to charge you. No, Chief, no. How much should we charge this man? No, I'm thinking we should create a tender here.
Somebody once said that when a bell rings, when somebody's saying something, they're speaking a deep truth.
Ah.
Okay. No more.
All right. No, it's fine, Chief. So, here we are then. All right? I don't have questions. I don't have answers to these questions, but we are now stuck here in this moment, and we want to shift identities. We want to shift who we are as individuals, but shift who we are as a collective, as a nation, as a people. Because I think although we are still grappling with the questions of who we are, it seems to me that looking at the way things are going on, very soon we are all going to be confronted with questions that affect all of us. In fact, I think we're already seeing that affect all of us, irrespective of our skin color and history. So the question of what we are needs to be handled simultaneously to the question of who we are, individually and as members of social groups. Okay? So that is where I want to leave it, really, for casting that broad canvas. And I would like now, having said all those perhaps provocative or sometimes uninteresting things to you, and for us to really have a conversation about what do you think? What do you think about who we are and
what it would take for us to shift identities. Are we shifting? Have they started shifting?
Some people say yes, some people say no. Is shifting for us the same thing? Would it mean the same thing for everybody? So yes, that's where I am. Thank you. And apparently there's a roaming mic which doesn't work, so. Yes.
Firstly, thank you for the feast of those ingredients for this conversation. I want to just add the ingredient of the notion that as adults, or even then thinking that we are intellectuals, that this notion of how we approach the getting out and or how we understand what it is to be human is something that's instinctually understood, that it's inherent knowledge, that children go into a playground and touch each other and want to play and explore the differences of perception, just five senses perception of each other, instinctually, as animals would sniff each other when they meet. It's only learned that there is this difference equals power, equals less or more, equals non-human, non-being, etc. So I'm proposing that besides children being great gurus, that we should listen better too, and question what it is that we're teaching them and how we're constricting their wisdom as they are schooled in our ignorance. Our histories prove our ignorance of this truth, is that we not only listen to the children, but we also try to reconnect with that inherent humanity inside, not from a political, conceptual, bonjour, etc., but to literally step out of the structure you're talking about, our mentality, and our so-called adult wisdom and authority of knowledge, and to humble ourselves to return to a sense of belief, maybe. Before you see, believe it. And if you believe it, you will see it. That this is what we are naturally. And it's less confrontational to be able to say, wow, I don't have to look at this outside of me, I don't have to go to university, I don't have to join the United Nations. I just have to sit in myself and return to myself, and that humanity will emerge with effort, but it will emerge because it's indigenous to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't want to respond to that. I want other people to take the conversation forward. So I've got the lady then and the gentleman here. And I'll move the side. Yes.
I would like to agree with this lady here that, you know, this is exactly what I had actually come to this course for. And I'm thrilled to hear you talk about these issues you do. And I have so many questions and so many comments to make. But I'll just do two, and I'd like to say that I grew up in South Africa during the apartheid era, left for 30 years, and then came back now to settle again in South Africa. And I am pained to hear you say that there are still these horrendous differences between. I even have trouble with the terms black and white, because coming back, I ask myself almost every day in the street, how do you classify people today? Look at people and look at all the unfortunate term mixed marriages and the results of mixed marriages. And there I have to criticize your guru, Franz Fanon, because I mean he seems to want to project this division. And when I look around me, I want to ask, who's black and who's white? It's a matter of perspective, isn't it? And it already theoretically, actually, you know, within the white community, as we all know, the history of the white community during the apartheid era, who was white? Okay, so that's my one issue, and I'm trying to cut myself short. And the other issue is biology. How are we human? I mean, look at the little differences, biological differences there are between what you call black and whites. If you look at us biologically, You know, I mean, that's the redeeming factor. We are all human from a biological point of view. Even though he says, your Franz Fanon says, ethics has to come into it. But I think he should go into biology and see how little difference there really is between you and assuming that I am white, which I'm not. Just as an example, I'm not white.
Right. Again, as I said, I don't want to respond to these issues. I would like for us to open into a conversation. I've got the gentleman here, and then as I said, I'll move to this side. Thank you for your input.
I'd like to suggest that there's a question that you didn't ask, an important question. Excuse me. And that's, where have we come from? It's a difficult question to answer. And this doesn't apply only to South Africa. If you take a recent example from the United States, this film by Steve McQueen, 12 Years a Slave,
yes,
which it seems might win Oscars. But what strikes me as remarkable about that is that all these years after the end of slavery, maybe this is the beginning of a conversation that hasn't taken place in the United States. There's an issue that white Americans and black Americans don't talk to one another about. And that's the issue of slavery and the slave trade. And it's not only America. The British have suffered from amnesia about the great damage they did all over the world in so many countries during the time of empire. And if you confront them with this, they say, oh, Indian railways, look at all the good things we did. The Japanese haven't come to terms with what they did to the Chinese. Many of them, people in top rank.
Have we now, in South Africa come to terms?
Huh?
Have we in South Africa come to terms?
Well, now that it seems
I think that's
that there's been a failure here. I must be cautious because I've lived my adult life in North Africa, not here.
Can I suggest that you be brief, because I just want to give some time to other folks as well. Yeah.
I'm coming now to that one. I think there's been a failure since 1994 to develop within the educational system a common view of our history, a view that can be taught in the schools and that can be experienced by the children in common, not as a means of division.
Can I ask you to hold it there? Okay, thank you. I'm not sure who was next. Can I saw hands, I'm not sure who was the two of you? No? Yes?
Okay. I think that this point that we got on feeling that everybody is the same or we belong to the same race is too far. And I think there's something practical that must happen, which is justice, you know? We have already a lot of theories and practical things to deconstruct the racist thinking, the racist things. So, and we, I don't think, segregation. While we are races are segregated like that, I don't think that this can shift this identity of black folks being seen as a second category of humans, you know, and not have seen like all belong to the same human family.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? I'll take a hand then. I'll take those two hands and then the third one to Todd's, and then I'll come up. Okay. All right. Can I ask you to agree? Because I just want to come back to this gentleman. He actually had his hand in my chair as well.
So I'll
give it a try. Who was here? I'm not sure.
Yeah, you go ahead. Okay. I think that, because I'm hoping that you can help unpack this problem for me. I agree entirely that they were there and what is being like, what is white racism not actually saying. And but yet I identify so closely with my blackness as the young black man in South Africa, because because I believe so strongly to be, you know, bequeathed with a legacy that is bequeathed consciously. Because there's such broad strokes made on people, like what has been black for me doesn't necessarily mean black for you as female. Feminism is so vastly different between the liberty to do what you want with your body and conservative feminism, where women should possibly go to workplace and run, I don't know, suits and not parade around one of the grand stage or whatever. But these are all, I think, at the very least, justifiable forms of expression, liberation and stuff, because we're all so different, yet we're grouped together in such thin veiled bonds. It's not really, not really that collective, but we're made collective. And so I want to, I have problematic in the sense that we can't actually go in with everyone's pulling in different directions. And as a black man or a woman who is a privileged oppressed person, I find it interesting to see how do we progress out of our ideas of bondage within ourselves on moving together, essentially.
Thank you. There was another hand somewhere like that.
Yeah, Julio.
Yes.
I want to thank you, you know, just for being there. You put yourself in there and you approached it. I also want to thank you for liking Fanon. I realize he played a very significant role in the thinking of Steve Biko. You remind me of Steve Biko. For me, it's a shifting identity, just seeing you. I have been lecturing at the University of Stellenbosch, the business school, for the past 6 years. I haven't seen a brother like you at all, doing it the way you do. I haven't seen a South African black person standing. So this already is a shifting identity for me. And I also think it's a statement of where we are in South Africa. Then, you know, are we free? No, I'm not free. Now, like this lady, I was also in the States for 22 years, but I also qualified as a social psychologist. And I find coming back, I'm not free of the anger and the stain. So, yeah, so I also therefore like your question, how do we get out of the zone? I think we need each other. We need people who are compassionate. And it's not always easy when we are around people who are not compassionate. So, yeah, and are we free? I also think this type of conversation is the vehicle, as difficult as it is. So I'm not so pleased that the issues you raised and will bring it back to us so that we can engage.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, there goes my prof, so I've got to be careful what I say now. No, but that's said in appreciation. I like the way you approached it, the question of the club that you have to aspire to and the whites having to accept you there. I think that's really great, because that can't work. There's no ways. I also like the idea of starting off with being human. Like this lady says, we are all basically the same. Apparently there's more DNA differences in chimpanzees than in the total human race. We are very tightly bound in terms of our DNA. So that should be a good lesson for us to say, let's start off there, and then maybe bring it back from there of saying, well, then being a human South African, what does that mean? And there I believe ethics do come into it. It was interesting to hear that ethics was mentioned in Switzerland today at the peace talks they have there, of saying, are there human ethics? Maybe not using the word, but that's what they meant. What are our South African ethics, our way of doing things ethically? And maybe moving back from there, that's what I got from listening to you, so that eventually it could get to me and my personal identity, where I could see as a white South African who's been privileged by apartheid, how do I want to change my experiences and my history? I can't do much about the past, but going forward, how I can change that in terms of finding something in there. That is my understanding.
Thank you. I just want to double check with Emma how much time we have, because I want to make a few remarks, then hand over to her. 15 minutes? Perfect. Okay. Can I make a few remarks, and then I'll get back to that corner right there. Okay. Now, the issue of being human, I think we can all agree that we are all human. So this is not the problem. Okay? And so I think we should be careful not to glibly say, yes, we are all human, and then say, therefore, we should move forward. As if we've always treated each other as humans, and that's precisely the point. Okay. Now, I think there are different levels to look at this and to perhaps tackle it. One is that let's start at the micro level of everyday encounters. I think it matters a huge deal how we encounter and treat each other on that everyday level. Okay. Do we greet each other in stores? Do we still spot, move a few spaces forward when somebody else that you of a different skin color is next to you? All those kinds of things matter. Do we greet each other? Do we have a warm demeanor towards each other? All right, because that makes a huge difference. Okay, so that's the micro level of everyday encounters. So that's what it means. Part of that for me, those are the ethics of being human. Okay. Prof. Ndebele was talking about leaning into conversations. You observe something happening to somebody of a different social group. That what do? I know inking as out. It's their problem, not me. And then you move on. Kind of. So those kinds of things are really about what it means to be human at that micro level, everyday encounters. And then, of course, there's a more difficult one, which we're still not free of anyway, the structural one. Okay. The structural one is about the historical conditions that have shaped your life in a particular way, whether you like it or not, whether you want to say you benefited or not. The point is, you are born into particular structures, and you either supported them or did not support them. Right? And that's the reality we sit with. So an uncomfortable question is, whether you're the one who benefited or were victimized, how do you move out of these spaces? Okay? So, if you are a person born into systems of privilege, how do you deal with those privileges, knowing that they are illegitimately gained for the most part? Okay? If you are someone living in a system of poverty and underdevelopment somewhere in the townships, how do you get out of that, all right, without resorting to crime and violence and corruption? All right? I think the gentleman posed a very interesting question. I think for a lot of people who grow up around during apartheid as well, how do you get out of the anger? Okay? If you're white folk, how do you get out of the denial and the guilt? That not everybody is consumed by that, but there are all those kinds of things. Right? So those are a few remarks I want to throw out there and then open it up again to you. Now, I promise that I'll stop there, and I see you've got your briquette, and I'll come back this side. You've got your hand. Yes?
Just simply to follow you just used the word consumed by emotion. I appreciate lectures like yours where there is a recognition of how we want to see so many positives, whilst actually we need to acknowledge the in my case, for instance, the paralyzing depth of guilt which I carry as a white South African. And like many people, I'm a returnee, and having to deal with my disappointment and shame and guilt and many, many very confused and negative emotions to do with wishing that things were different more quickly. And my regret that I have never been able to co-construct my identity as a South African through having been brought up separate from the majority of South Africans. So I think that the two points about acknowledging the many, many negative, confused, and unworked through emotions, no matter what our categorization is, to find ways of dealing with that, which I find extraordinarily difficult. And the second thing is to recognize that identity is constantly co-constructed as well as shifting.
Thank you. Now, yes. And then I'll come to the gentleman down here.
It's interesting that this is what's come up. One of the reasons why I decided to take this course was because grew up, although in a small town, in a very liberal town. So the first time I really came across what is race is when I moved to Cape Town. And I was labeled with things like advantaged, oppressor, responsible for slavery, responsible for apartheid. That's been something really difficult for me to face because it was something that I was born into and that had no control over. And for me nowadays, what upsets me more than racism is poverty. Because I think you can get past racism. I don't get offended if someone calls me white because I am fairly pale. And in the school that I grew up in, it was just stating something. I have brown hair, I have white skin, she has brown hair, she has brown skin. It wasn't a label with all the connotations that we attach to it now. But what does upset me is poverty, and I think that maybe as a born free generation, we should be just as upset that poverty is what is keeping South Africans down. And yes, that is inherited, but it's also a new thing and it keeps on happening. So we've had 20 years of democracy and freedom, but I think poverty is what's driving this more than anything.
Before I come back to you, can I give the gentleman? Thank you so much. Yes.
I just said something about how to go out from the county, for example, how to improve or like lifestyle or in that sense. I think the way to get a new identity or formal identity is to try to spread the sense of and the concept of the identity. Not just my identity like yesterday, the guy about the homosexual trials or whatever. It's not just a specific kind of thing. We have to build a kind of general identity that is focused in what you said, biological sense, and then we expect from that biological sense to be like a human. And that is have an idealistic way to see us all together. So in that sense, you can't say how I will improve my lifestyle or how I will go out from the township. The idea is to get that problem from all of us. Like it's not a problem of the people in the township, it's a problem of us also, like a normal society.
Thank you.
Oh. One example is to see how we still differentiate for different reasons. The thing that we have people in our houses, you can see that almost all of us, we have a black person in our house. I think that is terrible. You can go to the restaurant, you can see all the waiters who are black people. Why? That is not normal. Maybe it's not normal in Cape Town, but Cape Town I think is quite wrong. And one way to change that is just don't go into that kind of places where you see too much differentiation, too much segregation. Because a lot of people also think that segregation or discrimination is an active thing, like, no, I don't want you. But that is not discrimination. You can also do discrimination when you are disinterested in other things. And you exclude people. You don't think about the problems of other people.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. All right. Anybody else want to go after her? Okay. He used to be my lecturer, so I'll have to give him yes. Lionel, is that correct? Is that the name? Okay, but can I give the lady here first? She'll be quick, and then I'll come back to you, and then I'll take a few more hands. I've got one there at the back.
I just want to comment on the idea that slavery is over and long ago. Besides child trafficking, human trafficking, there's also, just the child labor systems, and obviously we know all the factory trauma in countries all over the world. Slavery is very much alive. So just to not leave ourselves of it from our big human story, it's very much alive.
Thank you. All right. Yes.
just to make a point that I think it's one thing to say that all of us are human, but coming back to the issue of poverty, there are dehumanizing conditions under which people are forced to live and continue to live and protest about on a daily basis. And I think the conditions continue to dehumanize people on the basis that there's poverty, there is poor education or no education, and a whole range of things related to it as well. So I think that we should not neglect the recognition of what people are forced to live in that dehumanizes them in spite of everything else.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
I was just wondering about labels. The other day we touched on that. And surely when you start using the labels, you are shifting an identity yet again. I was thinking, when you talk about previously disadvantaged people, aren't we shifting an identity back again to something else? That it makes it even more difficult for people to then get out of that again. I don't know. I'm asking a question.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Nice question to come to the question. I would like to respond to the question of if you're asking about how do we get out of this issue of who's being and who's not being. I just like to comment on quite a lot of stuff that I've been seeing just generally in South Africa.
Can I ask you to comment on a few things? Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, basically, my thing is that I think one maybe of the options that can help us is that we stop silencing uncomfortability. Because I sense that the idea of talking from different spaces, where I myself are coming from a privileged point of view in some other conversations, we tend to, if we probably the superior ones or whatever the case might be, or if you cause uncomfortability, we tend to create a silence and try to suggest, because I don't think this idea of trying to move in a common direction, we can move in a common direction, but not necessarily everyone will be moving in that same path. While all South Africans are quite scarred by our history or whatever present situations that are currently happening, like HIV/AIDS, homosexuality, children being raped currently, so we have new processes and events that kind of shape us differently now. So we kind of have to deal with that as well. So I just like to put it out there that perhaps silencing the issues and trying to say I don't think we should go with that.
Thank you very much.
We need to unpack the issues and perhaps also speak about what is that uncomfortability that is
one of the issues that is happening. Thank you. Can I make two remarks and then head over to Emma, and then I think she needs to close. As a white person, she says she has to silence the conversation. Okay, so I think, if anything, I think part of what I've been really trying to do with this conversation is precisely to make the point through this conversation that the issues that we are interested in of shifting identities and asking who we are in post-apartheid South Africa is to make the obvious point that they are complex, that they are being fought every day from our own positions of where we are, okay, and we all have vested interests. So it is to say, yes, we want to shift identities, but then when you ask what is at stake and what would it take, then it's a different question. But then the question is, I guess, based on all of these complexities, if we don't do anything, what is at stake then for all of us? So, and I don't think any one person has the answer to that. What I'm simply happy for and about is the fact that we are talking. Rather, let's grapple through these issues. Let's talk through the comfort. Let's not silence the discomfort. Let's talk rather than fall into a civil war. I think that will take us way back than where we are. So let's rather talk through things, but talking is also not enough. Let's also begin to do things. All right? Let's do the positive things that will make that change in our own lives and in the lives of people that we live with. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very much for that. I have the great privilege of having the last word, which is wonderful. There's a couple of things I wanted to say. Maya Angelou has a great quote that says, do the best you can until you know better, and then do better. All right? So perhaps this is one of those conversations where you've seen something else, take something from that, and perhaps do better. Notice it's not just think, it's do. And I want to also pick up on this idea of woundedness and compassion. When we are angry, when we are wounded, I would argue that you cannot compare the wounds, but that we, as human beings, we are all wounded by being in the system that creates some humans human and some non-human, right? Different ways, cannot compare them, but we are all wounded in some ways. How do we find compassion to be with people when we are still dealing with our wounds? So it's a kind of a big question. And I think I'm specifically struck by Buchle's statement that we need a lot of meditation about what it means to be human broadly, not just in our thinking, but again in our doing and what it will take. So thank you very much for that.
I've got two girls. Thanks so much.